So let's just start off with what your name is, what organization you work with, and why you're here in the Bay Area, June 3rd to the 9th, 2004.
I'm Clara. I'm working with Indie Media Netherlands and the Biotech Indie Media site. And basically, I'm here because of the BioDev meet and the Bio meeting to cover it for Biotech Indie Media and to also to connect with other indie media people and with other anti-GM activists.
So you work with biotechimc.org, is that correct? Can you give us a little background on what that is and why that site is focusing on the biotech IMC issues?
Biotech Indie Media is the first is a topic site of Indie Media. The idea is that a lot of actions take place on grassroots level, and that's where local IMCs are really great for, to focus on that. But those of us who work with a global issue like biotech, we spend a lot of time like searching through a lot of biotech, a lot of indie media sites again and again. And at some stage, we just thought, okay, we need one site where we get all the information about anti-GMO actions all over the world. So the idea is that we take articles from the local sites, either manually or automatically, and that we put them all on the biotech site. So if you want to know about biotech actions, anti-GMO actions or anything, you just go to the biotech site, and you see that in the same week there's an action against Monsanto in the Philippines as well as in South Africa. And I think that's something, it's a way to connect activists, it's a way of exchanging ideas, exchanging knowledge, and it's also a way of sharing resources. Because one action that works, for example, in the Philippines, you can do the same action basically in Brazil as well quite often, and you don't have to reinvent the wheel.
Biotech IMC is there for the purpose of providing information and education around the issues of the biotech industry. What are some of those issues? And maybe explain a little bit about the difference between the coverage of these issues in, of say, Europe, for example, versus the United States, which we had a discussion about before, and the fact that the U.S. is sorely lacking in a comprehensive analysis in terms of a mainstream press coverage.
First of all, I think biotech is one of the most of the technological issues that are the most issues that are connected to globalization, because it's covering so many issues. It's about environment, it's about food production, it's about food security, it's about patents. It's about all the issues that come up in anti-globalization, and that's why it's also so much a global issue. We focus very much on agriculture and food production, especially because companies like Monsanto are all over the place, and they very much try to separate activists and politics in each country. And sometimes they come up with very different ways of arguing in each country as well. And I think it's good to connect all of us activists working on that issue, because there are some differences and there are a lot of things we have in common. But I think different is especially between Europe and the US, that Europe has quite a long history by now of knowledge about GMOs. In Germany, the first discussions about that started in the late 80s. In the early 90s, mainstream media was covering GMOs. There weren't any products on the market, but already the newspaper had it as the headlines, had the cover pictures on GMOs, basically some kind of drawings of Frankenfood. And so in Europe, a lot of the people know about GMOs. It's been all over mainstream media, while in the US, apparently not. I've heard that there has been really some kind of effort to convince editors that there is no issue on GMOs. So maybe it can help people here in the US to also to see what kind of issues are discussed in Europe, for example, or what kind of issues are discussed in Africa and Asia, where apparently also the discussion is much further than it is here sometimes.
Why don't you give us an example specifically of the dangers of that the biotech industry is posing to agricultural production, patenting issues, etc. Maybe give us a few key issues that really stand out for you as that people need to know about.
With GM crops, you have a very uniform crop. So what you lose with GM crops much more than with the existing seeds is diversity. There has been a lot of diversity. There have been a lot of land races of different crops. Like in rice fields, farmers used to grow something like 50, 60 varieties in a village. And with the Green Revolution already, that was cut down very much into just a few so-called super seeds, which didn't really work out, but anyway, they already replaced a lot of varieties. And now GM crops is even adding up to that. And because of crops are patented, farmers don't even have the right to save seeds anymore. For centuries, we have been developing seeds just through farmers using the seeds that work best for their fields. That has led to some grass kind of plant to develop into the maize we have now, which is really a staple crop. That has been done just by traditional breeding, by farmers choosing which works well for them and just use that. And now the biotech companies come and say, well, this is genetic engineered, we can patent it, you're not allowed to grow it again. So basically they're cutting down on some fundamental issue on how food is grown, how farming is done. And they just try to erase all of that knowledge, all of that diversity. And that's not only in developing countries. When people talk about farm-safe food, most people think about some small-scale farmer in Africa. But basically, a lot of canola farmers in Canada and in the US, but also a lot of wheat farmers, they use farm-safe seed. They use part of their harvest as seed for the next year. And the biotech companies are trying to stop that.
These companies are selling genetically modified organisms and foods as safe. Are they safe?
No. First of all, the little that we know shows that they're probably not safe. But basically, there hasn't really any research being done. What the FDA here in the US is saying, they say the company have told us that they regard this crop as safe or this food as safe. The FDA is not doing any testing, for example. And most of the papers that are handed in are just kind of, they're very bad signs. I've been reading through them for the European approval procedures, and there are studies which are so small and they're not repeated, and they don't have statistic data. They're studies done on a level that I wouldn't have passed university with them. So basically, we don't know whether they're safe or not. There are some incidents which haven't been followed up, and that's kind of very critical. There have been some incidents of allergies rising. There have been some incidents of cells being changed. There's enough indication to say there might be something happening, and we really have to look into that. Unfortunately, countries like the US, Canada, Australia are trying to stop this precautionary principle. They say, well, eat it until you know that it's dangerous. I don't think we're going to have any GM crop that will just kind of kill people the moment they eat it. They're not that bad. But most of the time with food, you only see the implications 10, 20 years later. There are indications in Argentina, for example, where a lot of soybeans are grown now, that the food has changed so much that a lot of people are getting ill, that there are hormone changes by now, that girls get their menstruation much, much earlier than they used to. So I think there is enough to follow up on. And if you read the book Seeds of Deception, you see a lot of examples that at least should make people think and to say, okay, let's stop, let's do this research. In Europe, about 3% of the money spent on GM crops is spent on safety research, environmental research. That's already a lot compared to the rest of the world. So basically, there isn't any research. There's been one study so far where actually people were fed on GM crops, while over 10 years, people here in the US have been eating it without any research.
You have a background in biology. Maybe you can shed some light on some of the science or engineering of these crops that is occurring. With that background in mind, what do you think we need to know, or what approaches need to happen, either to stop this mass experimentation or to create a testing protocol that would guarantee the safety of it?
First of all, the science in genetic engineering is very crude. It's very old-fashioned. It's based on an understanding of the DNA and the genes that stems back from the time that DNA was discovered, actually, basically. It's still thinking along the line that the chromosome is just kind of a line of just a chain of genes, and you can take out and put in whatever you want. in the last years, again and again, scientific research has shown that that's not true. There's not one gene, one protein anymore. The whole Human Genome Project showed that one gene can lead to very different things. There have been a lot of ideas totally being changed. But still, the biotech industry with GM crops is relying on a very old, very simple idea of DNA. So first of all, the companies would need to change that thinking. Unfortunately, the moment they think differently, they can't do GM crops anymore. Because plants are not that you can just take out something and put something else in. They work as a whole network within the plant. So I think if you do good science, you can't do genetic engineering. And then the next step is that genetic engineering, even called engineering, is a very, very raw technology. Basically, genes are just kind of thrown into a cell, and they land wherever they come to. It's not a precise technology, even so they keep on telling us that. Basically, they just kind of go on experimenting, and if a plant looks like it could be suitable, they just try that one out. Quite often they have like hundreds of plants, and then they take the two or three that might work, and they haven't got a clue why. They can only see whether what they want to happen is happening. But there's no way of testing for all the other unintended things that could happen. You can't really look into the DNA. So therefore you can only see, okay, this is herbicide resistant, that's what I wanted. But you can't find out all the other changes. You can't find out whether composition in the plant has changed or not. You can test quite a few of them. Unfortunately, that's not even tested most of the time. But basically, you can't test for all eventualities. And then it's the question, do we want to risk that? In most cases, there's no need for this kind of GM crops. There are virus-resistant sweet potatoes developed, while there are virus-resistant sweet potatoes, for example. There are herbicide-resistant crops developed and being grown, while everybody knows by now that they need even more herbicides than before. And we all know that herbicide applications are not the way to go forward. So the question is, if this technology is so old-fashioned and so crude, do we want to take the risk that comes with it? And in most cases, most people would just say no.
When you say that these GM crops aren't even needed, that implies there's another motive. And from what I understand, and from, you know, the more I get educated on this subject, that the motive is pretty clear. It's about privatization.
First of all, I think you're right. Most of the genetic engineering is done for money. It's very simply to earn money. It's a way of earning money, not so much because the crops are better, for example, but because you can patent them. So far, it has not. Most countries have a law that explicitly say you can't patent plant varieties. But with genetic engineering, they suddenly become an invention that you can patent. That means that for 10, 15 years or whatever is legal in that country, you have the exclusive rights to use something. For Roundup Ready, the patent had run out in a lot of countries. But with Roundup Ready combined with Roundup Ready herbicide-resistant crops, you have a new market again.
Maybe explain what that is.
Roundup is a broad-spectrum herbicide. It's basically a herbicide that kills nearly everything. It has been used quite often, for example, with fruit trees or so, or in wine growing, because you can just kind of kill all the herbs that come up, or all the weeds that come up in the field. You can't really use it for any other crops, like canola or wheat or maize, because it would kill the actual crop plant as well. But so far there hadn't been so much herbicide-resistant weeds against it, so they really wanted to use that for crops as well. And the only way of doing that was changing the plant so that they wouldn't be touched by the herbicide. The herbicide itself is called Roundup, and the crops are usually commercialized as Roundup Ready, like they're ready for the herbicide to come. So with this herbicide that was still working, they really had a market. And most of the, I think about 95% of all GM crops are herbicide resistant, and the biggest part of that is resistance to Roundup. So Monsanto has an enormous market worldwide, and that's why they're really pushing so much for it. They have a herbicide that otherwise cannot be used in normal agriculture. When it comes to Roundup and when it comes to Monsanto, that's one of the successes that we really had in the years, that we actually had a couple of weeks ago. when Monsanto decided to pull out of Roundup Ready wheat. That wasn't because I thought that it was a bad idea to do it, but because their shareholders said, well, we can't really do this. There's no market for it. With the experience from Canada, where actually Canada lost its biggest export market to Europe when Roundup Ready or other herbicide-resistant canola just kept on contaminating everything. And Europe has an import stop for this kind of crops. So basically, it was very clear to all the farmers, and even to the farmers' organizations, that U.S. would lose its complete export market to Europe the moment GM wheat would be grown. And actually, food importers from Japan and Australia had already started looking for different sources. So that's a very clear economical threat that would have come in that case from introducing GM crops.
There's also the issue of gene privatization, or gene patenting. Can you speak a little bit about that? What is gene patenting? What is going on with corporations patenting the genes that are in every human being?
Basically, the patenting of genes is very, very absurd. You get a patent normally for something that you invent. A patent is the idea that to kind of reward the effort that you put into inventing something, that for a certain time you have the exclusive right to do that. When it comes to genes, basically what companies are doing is that they just screen the DNA, they sequence it, and they say, oh, we found it, it's ours. That is really not what patents were about. I mean, patents are problematic anyway, but they really shouldn't be applied for something that you just find. That's like going on the street and finding a stone and say, oh, I'm going to patent all stones now. Actually, a couple of years ago, an NGO in the UK tried to show how absurd these patent systems are, and they actually got a patent on fish and chips because nobody ever had patented that before. So they have a patent now to sell fried fish and fried potatoes together. And this is the level that we have now reached with patents. The problem is, even though it's very absurd, that it basically stops using everybody else from using it. Like in medical research, if a biotech company has a patent on a certain gene, you can't really use that for any further research. There are some genes that are now used to diagnose certain diseases, and every time a doctor wants to do that, they have to pay a license fee to the company. In other respects, when it comes to patented genes in plants, it means that even though the company only owns the plant, or only owns the gene, they also claim the plant, because the plant contains the gene. So that's what the whole Persis Meiser case in Canada is about. Monsanto has patented a certain gene that is making the crops herbicide resistant, and basically they say every crop in which this gene is found is ours. And that's really... You can't stop genes from spreading, and they just claim everything, and basically that's reducing every way of doing agriculture, of doing what you want with plants.
What do you hope people are going to get out of this gathering this week in San Francisco? What do you see as some of your goals in terms of educating people on these subjects, and even in terms of confronting the biotech industry itself?
I think when it comes to the biotech industry, they will see that there is a lot of resistance. What you usually have in these conferences is like all the companies come together and they talk and they do their business contact and they think that the world is great. When you now go to the conference center, you see cops all over the place. You see cops in the buildings. You see security with dogs in the building. And that's making very clear that there is a resistance. When it comes to people here in San Francisco or in the US in general, I think what we might give them is a bit of hope, is a bit of maybe knowledge that the rest of the world is against it and that we are pretty far with that. Europe is still banning new GM crops. A lot of African countries are saying we're not going to take them. And slowly it seems to be that also the US is waking up. There are some counties in the US who have now banned the growing of GMOs. And I think if we can spread that message, and if we can show there are a lot of people against it, there are a lot of people who don't want to eat it, there are a lot of farmers who don't even want to grow it, then we can build much more, and then we can at least stop new GMOs on the market And I think we can also make sure that the old ones are just kind of outphased. We still have to deal with genetic contamination then, but at least we can stop them from introducing new ones and then start cleaning up.
What is the connection between the biotech industry and the G8 summits and organizations like the WTO and the trade agreements?
First of all, as I said earlier, for me, GM crops are the product of a globalized market, and they show all the bad things that you have in globalized market when it comes to privatization, when it comes to taking rights of normal people. So that's what it already connects very much to the G8 world. So this kind of issues are discussed. When it comes to the WTO is very much in favor of GM crops. Well, on the one hand, we have a UN convention, the Convention on Biodiversity, and the Cartagena Protocol. They are there to regulate the trade of GMOs, and they give countries the right to say, we don't want these crops, or we don't want these crops now, we want to do proper research first. The WTO, on the other hand, says, well, nobody is allowed to stop anybody in trading anything. And that is why the US has put forward a complaint at the WTO against the European Union. Because I said this kind of labeling that the European Union allows should not be allowed. You shouldn't be allowed to even demand that you have to write whether it's a GMO or not on the package. So basically at the moment the WTO is very much in favor of GMOs, while the UN is not really against it, but is wanting to regulate it. And we really have to see how this WTO complaint is working out.
Couple more questions. What would you advise people do to get involved and educate themselves or become involved actively in these issues?
I think there are a lot of sources of information that people can use. There are things like the biotech indie media site where you get news about actions. There are a lot of NGOs that do a lot of great work. There are some institutes. Unfortunately, Greenpeace in US apparently has closed their GM campaign. But if you go, for example, to the International Greenpeace site, if you go to Friends of the Earth, if you go to a lot of organizations in UK and just look on their websites, they have a lot of educational material. We realized in the last days that we make a lot of material for groups in Europe, and we make a lot of material and educational material for African and Asian countries. Maybe it's time that we also make some information package for the people in the US. But I think if you turn really to the already existing English spoken material, there's a lot to do. And if you go to the, for example, to the biotech website or to the BioDev website, then you will see all the information that's there. That's biotech.indymedia.org. And the other site is biodev.org. And you're going to find more links and more information there.
Thanks for doing this interview. And do you have any last comments?
I think it's time that consumers and people in the US are waking up. And I see them waking up. So I'm very hopeful that North America as the last continent is going to join the worldwide resistance against GM crops.
Great. Thank you.